Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
WDEV presents House Calls Vermont. Hosts Jim Bradley and Chris West share their knowledge and expertise on topics specific to the opportunities and challenges of building and renovating in Vermont. Our program brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive, Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com. RK Miles, Allen Lumber is closed today and Monday and will reopen Tuesday, November 17th as RK Miles. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basement-y. northernfoundations.com. Home Builders and Remodelers Association of Northern Vermont at homebuildersvt.com. Poly Construction in South Burlington, one call does it all, online at polyconstruction.com. Your participation is encouraged. Call the listener line with questions at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 1-877-291-8255. Now, House Calls Vermont with Jim and Chris.
Hi, how's it going? This is Chris West. I'm here in the studio with Jim Bradley, and we are House Calls Vermont. I want to welcome our new listeners and our regulars. Thanks for listening in, and I'm just going to once again throw that number out there. We have a lot of ways to get in touch with us. First of all, if you can call, if you're interested in calling in during the show, 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. You can also listen to us if you're not in the listening area on the stream. That's www.wdevradio.com/stream. If you want to get in touch with us when we're off hours, you can send an email to housecallsvermont@gmail.com. We have a page on the homebuildersvermont.com, that's homebuildersvt.com website, and that has a link to our YouTube channel where we post links to all kinds of things we talk about during the show, as well as videos of the shows. Should be getting up the video from last week's show up there before the weekend is out.
Well, some of you may have heard about Ken Squire unfortunately contracting the coronavirus this week, and we wish him a speedy recovery and that all goes well for him as soon as humanly possible.
Get better quick, Ken.
Yes, Ken. This week we are going to dive into attics, and the discussion topics will be the many different type of attics that there are out there. How would you retrofit those? Why are attics so important to the overall performance of a building? What work you could do yourself? What work you should shy away from? And in even building new construction, what attics should be considered more favorably and how to avoid some of those mistakes that have been made for generations? First and foremost, we want to go over, you know, why is an attic so important in the building? Chris, what would you say are some of the more important things that we should look at when considering an attic?
So that kind of harkens back to what we were talking about last week. We were doing the ABCs of air sealing, and this week we're going over the A, the attic. We're going to dial in there. And the reason the attic is so important is because of that stack effect we were talking about last time. The stack effect is that warm air rises, you're heating up warm air in your house, whether you're using forced hot air or hydronic system that warms the air. That air rises and pushes against what we call the top pressure plane. If you were to go into the top floor of your house and look at the ceiling, that is the top pressure plane. And that is where a lot of air that is buoyant pushes through out into the attic and heats up the cold Vermont winter, which is not what we want to be doing with our money. So that's one of the first ones we'd be looking at, the fact that hot air rises and will reduce the efficiency of anything else we do on the house. we also want to make sure that we're looking at durability, right? When we get up into an attic, one of the first things we do is we see, is the attic venting properly? Are we seeing mold on the framing members of the roof or on the sheathing? Do we see a lot of mouse or other rodent stuff going on in the insulation that's up there? Is there good insulation? Are we looking at a type of insulation like vermiculite that has health and safety issues associated with it? Those are the things we'll start with.
You know, speaking of some of the rodents you can see up there, it reminds me of the things that we've encountered in some of these attics, whether it be bats, dead raccoons.
Desiccated rats.
Definitely. And then also like a superhighway of mouse activity through the cellulose and through the fiberglass. And you see all these mouse-sized holes that are chewed through. And you know that there's a lot of activity there. And once they turn that insulation into that kind of a pathway, or they decimate it, then the effectiveness of that R value diminishes greatly. Other things that we'll find in attics, a lot of debris that people will leave over the years, whether it's from plumbing work, electrical work, or just some roofing work, masonry work.
I think my
work.
Favorite thing to find in an attic is knob and tube.
Knob
right?
and tube wiring.
So and tube wiring, you may recognize this if you're ever in a wall of an old house. It's basically, they used to run wires about a foot apart or sometimes 6 inches apart, and they had these ceramic knobs, and the wire would skip from knob to knob, and one was the common and one was the neutral, because of course with alternating current you need a circuit. And that has been outlawed for a very long time. You cannot have live knob and tube wiring in your house because it's very dangerous. The insulation that covered those wires were made out of cotton, and over the 100 years that cotton has just completely degraded. And if you just bend that wire a little, all of the insulation falls off and you have an exposed wire, which everybody would have to agree is not a safe situation. So if you see that in your attic, find out quickly if it's live. If it isn't live, it's often not live. They often go up into an attic and say, oh yeah, we're going to cut that at both ends and it's not live. If it's not live, just leave it there. But we run into that in an attic for sure.
And after doing this work for as long as we have, I often ruin things for my family because of the knowledge that we've gained when I point things out that we may see on TV. If you remember the movie that many of you will be watching again this Christmas Vacation with Chevy Chase, one of the scenes is when he gets locked up in the attic, and he just tends to walk on the plaster lath back and forth until finally he falls through. But you notice there's no insulation up there either.
Now, wait a second. I have a memory of you, your crew, having someone put a foot through somebody ceiling at one point when they were in an attic.
Well, it was a young guy, and he said, I didn't fall through until I jumped up and down. So, yeah, you need to be aware of what's going on. You have to have your bearings about you and know that usually you only have about a 16-inch width, a 24-inch width of framing to walk on. You don't want to be walking on the plaster lath or the back of sheetrock or even tongue and groove. You want to be really careful up there if you're trying to do a do-it-yourself project. But, you know, the attics are just a really important part of the building because, as we said, if air can leak out of a building, it's going to be carrying moisture with it. And once it does so, it depressurizes the house and then brings in other air through the lower parts of the building, usually some nasty parts of the building like bad basements or just things that could be inside the walls. And that gets into your airstream and what you're going to be breathing for most of the winter as you have the house completely tightened up and your windows closed and doors closed and everything else. So it's just really important to identify how you're going to address the house and starting with the attic first.
So when we're talking about attics and attic flats and ceilings, there are a couple of types. In general, there are two main types of attics. You have an attic flat, and that attic flat, when you get your head up into your attic, even as a very small attic, you'll see that there's space above it, and that space is vented, either with gable end vents or with soffit vents that feed into a ridge vent. And that's how we make sure that there's good enough air going into that attic space to pull out the moisture. If we go into an attic and we see mold on the sheathing of the roof sheathing and or the framing members of the rafters, we know that there's not enough air moving through there to get rid of that moisture before the mold starts using it to eat and to grow. So that's a flat is overall the best and easiest way to insulate a house.
But one thing that's important there is Chris just touched on ventilation, and we're going to get into that a little bit further and more in depth a little later, I should say. is the fact, yes, you want your attic to be ventilated appropriately, but that doesn't mean that if you have a leaky attic where air is leaving the building, that you just increase the ventilation and you're going to solve all your problems. Because you've got to stop that air, that warm, buoyant, moisture-laden air, from ever getting up there in the first place. And then any residual moisture that's up there through vapor diffusion that doesn't come through air leakage or that would just collect up there, that you're having a way for that to get out.
Yeah. So we have attic flats. We all know attic flats. You almost always, although not always, have a drop-down stair or something to get up into it, or an attic hatch. Some of them have gable end access, which we prefer in general, but those are some options there. The other type of ceiling has a couple of names. One of them is the cathedral ceiling. The other name for that would be a slope. Right?
A vaulted
ceiling. And these ceilings are usually what we call warm ceilings. An attic flat is a cold ceiling because the attic above it is cold. But in a warm ceiling or cathedral ceiling, there's no air to be moved out of that. It's basically insulation from the sheetrock on the inside to the, you know, whatever metal roof or shingles that are on the outside. There's no air moving through that in a purposeful way. And those can be really hard to get right. It's in those slopes that we see a lot of issues. And so we need to build them right, and if we're going to renovate them, we need to think about the building science and put them back together right so we increase our durability. One of the things that we see right away when we walk up to a house that's having failing slopes is that the shingles on top, if they are shingles, are all curled up on the edges, right? That's called cupping. And that comes from something that we call micro seasons. So when you are Owings Corning, that makes the shingles, none of whom we are, of course, you're going to say that you have a shingle that's got a 30-year guarantee on it. So how do they actually figure that out in the lab? Well, they put the shingles through simulated seasons of summer and winter and summer of winter, and they do that over and over until they have estimated through that process 30 years of heating and cooling events. However, the second that you have a cathedral ceiling, you have not uncoupled the shingle from the heating of the house as you would on a regular attic flat. The attic flat, there's no real heat on the inside of the shingle or on the outside. You just have cold air. In a slope ceiling, what you have is warmth on the inside and cold on the outside. And those shingles are actually being heated by the air and the heat on the inside and cooled on the outside. So instead of having 30 years worth of cycles, you could have hundreds of years of micro cycles, because instead of just having the sun and the cold heat and cool those shingles, your house is doing it.
And where that is exacerbated or made worse is going to be when you have a vaulted ceiling, tongue and groove, that's surfaced with tongue and groove. And what a lot of times you'll see is this beautiful woodwork of a tongue and groove ceiling with no thought of putting some type of air barrier behind it. And so what happens is all that linear footage of joints in between the tongue and groove become a leakage pathway that gets right up into the insulation. It gets right up into the sheathing underneath. And sometimes that's just a metal roof, or it is some type of sheathing where that moisture hits, but then it condenses, drops back down and drips through the ceiling. So people say, oh gosh, I got a roof leak. Not really. You've got a condensation collection that is then daylighting back through the sheathing, where it will end up putting water stains out there and everything else. And so, you know, some of the best times to address that, you know, when we get called out there for this type of work, we're looking at that and say, gosh, no one really wants to cover that ceiling up to get a good air barrier over that wonderful tongue and groove, nor do they want to pay to take it down to get one established. So a lot of times what happens is you have to ask, how old is the roof? And is the roof nearing time for replacement? And if it is, your roofer, if you're going to have your roof replaced, you should be hiring a roofer who's taking that into consideration, that, hey, if we're going to be putting a metal roof on there that could be a 30 to 100 year roof, or we're going to be putting a new shingle roof on there, is that the time to go ahead and just take off a few test pieces of sheathing and inspect the quality of the insulation? I would say yes. And if you find out that there are problems there, whether it's rodent activity, a lot of air leakage, moisture collection, mold, then you go ahead and address it appropriately at that time, because you're not going to get that opportunity anytime soon in the future.
We're hitting up against a break, but we're going to start a call with Forbes in Corinth. Forbes, how can we help you?
This doesn't pertain to constructional aspect, but I have noticed recently that building materials have gone up 40%. Is there a reason for that? It can't be just the virus.
Well, no, there are several factors that come into play here. Years ago, what was happening, it used to be that sheathing materials, like plywood, OSB, they would have factories that would shut down periodically until demand increased. And so they would shutter them for a bit, and then they would reopen them when demand would rise again. But years ago, they actually shut them down, many of them, and did not reopen.
They dismantled them.
Yes, they dismantled them so they couldn't reopen. So that would then, in times where there's a hurricane or some other kind of drama within the nation, they would be able to then create a higher price point, and then that would be more expensive. So there's that. But there's a whole supply chain disruption that happened too. So just getting the wood from the forest through the lumberjacks, through the trucks being, you know, taking the materials to the factory for it being processed, then shipped out to suppliers and everything else, the trucking industry, I mean, every component of that was hindered by this current situation.
The closing of the Canadian border had a huge effect on our raw materials to these factories.
And then with that, a lot of people then staying at home started saying, you know what, I can do a lot of do-it-yourself projects like decks. And so pressure-treated lumber went way out of bounds.
There was a time, I don't know if you saw it, but there was a time about 2 months ago where you could not get pressure-treated lumber at all at any of the big box stores. It was gone.
And so what they had estimated, Forbes, is that for a standard new construction for a home that's roughly 2,000 square feet, that the price point for materials increased in cost about $16,000 plus. Now, it peaked in September, and the prices have started to come down. But as a builder, I'm concerned about for my clients going forward, if we go into lockdown again, that's only going to exacerbate the situation.
And we have seen builders changing their contracts to say, we are going to and willing to absorb a change in price between when you sign the contract and when we start building and buying those materials, up to about a 5% boost. But anything else is on you. So a lot of owners, people who are clients getting these buildings, are getting saddled with these changes. They have to. The builder can't operate a business
they couldn't
if they were to absorb those increases in prices. So very good that you noticed that, but we are expecting those to go back down if trends continue. Nothing is being promised, though.
Okay, well, covers it pretty well, but obviously it's a point of reality.
Yep. It is, sir. Yep. Definitely.
Okay, thank you.
So we have been talking about roofs and attics. Those things are intimately tied together. And we were just talking about cathedral ceilings. And during the break, Jim and I chatted a bit about unvented and vented cathedral ceilings. So there are a couple of ways that houses can be built where it looks like you have a cathedral ceiling, but it isn't a true warm ceiling. And one of those is something called a scissor truss. A scissor truss is where you have two different slopes in your truss. You have a slightly less steep slope on the inside, and then you go up maybe with an energy heel, which is a bumping up in order to make room for insulation, and a different slope for the roof outside. You could have, say, a 512 or a 412 on the inside and something like a 612 or an 812 on the outside. It's got a very good look to it. It's a cold roof in the classic sense. The other way is to build that roof in such a way that there's a venting channel at the top of the insulation layer and a membrane, a vapor permeable membrane, that allows air to go between the top of the sheathing and the bottom of where you're going to be putting your shingles or metal roof on. And that's a way, there are some houses built that way. However, most houses that are built with cathedral ceilings are not built that way. And most importantly, we see a lot of houses that are, the classic place that we find this is in a cape with doghouse dormers or shed dormers, where you have a renovation going on. The people have already at some point done a shingle replacement on the outside, and that shingle replacement was not done in conjunction with work on the inside. And then we find out that they want to fill that 5-inch cavity in the slopes of those rooms with insulation. And some people say, just fill it full of cellulose, it'll be fine. And our point of view is you are not giving enough vapor drying potential in that roof. So if someone says, oh, you've got some slopes and they're empty, let's just fill them with insulation, not necessarily the way to go. There are more things to be looked at before you dive in there.
Well, one of the things to look at, you know, as Chris points out, is what is the solar shading? You know, is there a drying potential? And we mentioned this on the very first show. Any work you're going to do and why the work that we're advising you to look at and how to approach it is important today is you have to take things in consideration that, yes, you want to make things as tight as possible. You want to have them ventilated right. But you also, in that ventilation, you want to make sure you're taking moisture away from these framing assemblies, roof sheathing, insulation materials, because that just ruins them. And it sets up, you know, a catastrophe of failures there that could happen. And so with that, you could build a house today and not vent the roof appropriately and then not have any problems. Then the trees start to grow that you planted out front, and then they start to block the sunlight, and then the drying potential diminishes, and thus so does the building materials at the same time. So these things have to be taken in consideration. So once again, you know, there's a house that I did. It was a cape, and I got up in there, and they just had the roof done, I think, the year before because they were having icicles, and they thought that would solve the problem. It didn't. So they called us out there. We did a home performance review, and I got up in there, put my head in the attic, and I didn't have to go far. And all I saw was a bunch of green, black, and white mold and deterioration of the sheathing. I said, did your roofer put their head up here to take a look at this? And they said, no, they didn't. And so I said, well, we're going to have to replace this. We're going to have to kill the mold, replace the sheathing. There's several ways to do that. We used pelletized dry ice for ice blasting. That's one way to do it. You know, very expensive. But, you know, when you're doing this work, there should be a methodology and a sequence that you achieve or that you follow to achieve the results you're looking for by first starting with a overall house review, a site review. Just make sure what is going on. What caused the failure of the siding to fail within 10 years? What caused the shingles to fail in 15 years instead of 30? There's something going on behind the scenes. And so doing a little bit further investigation instead of throwing really good money after bad is the proper way of going about this. Some areas that become really difficult to get into when you're looking at some of these houses, like a salt box, like a cape, is that the roofs get really, really tight, especially like a ranch where you have maybe a 412 pitch, which is a very shallow pitch, and you try to crawl in there and do some of these changes, it gets really, really difficult to achieve those. That's why if you are replacing the roof and pulling back sheathing, you can address some of those air leakage pathways at that time.
I think the question that comes to mind for me is, when is a roofing job more than a roofing job? And when should we expect our roofing professionals to recognize that this is more than just a pull-off and replace, or, which we find all the time in Vermont, they just slap another layer of shingles on top of the existing layers. I'm doing a renovation on a house right now where there were four layers of different things, starting from the 1850s with cedar shakes. And then they just slapped one, two, three, four roofs on top of that, including two layers of metal with asphalt shingles on top of that. If someone comes up to you and says, your roof is leaking, you need a new roof, well, let's save you a little money by not pulling off the old roof. What you're doing is you're just building on top of the mistakes of the previous builder who didn't take a look at why things were failing before they actually do the change.
You know, that harkens to the saying, don't expect, inspect. You know, don't expect that it's going to be okay and you can
don't
just cover
assume.
Back. Yes, exactly. But you need to inspect and you need to make sure what is the current state of affairs, what causes the premature failure, and what opportunities are there now that we can address. And with that, going back to the hot roof and cold roof, I just wanted to touch on this as well. First of all, if you want to call in with any questions that you have regarding your projects or any other building questions, building science questions, please give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free 877-291-8255. And so with the hot or cold roof is basically going to be a roof that does have ventilation, does have outside air getting into the underside of the shingles and thus allowing it to get cold during the winter months. At the other side of that, you have what's called a hot roof. And usually it's a non-vented roof assembly. People think that if you do it right, I was told this years ago, if you do it right, you make it tight, and you don't allow for any leakage or anything else to get in, then it's going to be a well-founded assembly and it's going to be really durable. That being said, some of the building science people have, you know, they test and inspect as well, have built some of these assemblies, and 5 years later, they go back and pull some of the roof sheathing, and what they have found, even in a completely foamed assembly that was airtight and nothing was going through the materials, vapor permeability still came into play. And so you'd have moisture that would make it out of the building up into the roof assembly and start to rot the roof away at the top of the framing members.
And we know OSB is vertical mulch.
Yes, exactly.
You leave that in contact with water for any amount of time, and it just turns into its constituent predigested, you know, wood that was put in it. Basically, it's just a bunch of resin glue holding it all together.
Yes, and usually people select the OSB for those materials because it is a engineered product. It's usually the price point is less expensive than plywood or regular CDX that somebody might use. But at the same time, when you're looking at long-term durability, I think that plywood is a more reasonable approach, even though it does add to the cost. It's a type of product that once it gets wet, it actually promotes drying. It becomes more permeable. And after the wetting cycle, it'll in exposure to moisture, it doesn't degrade like OSB will at the same time.
We've got a call coming in from Dave from Pittsfield. Dave, how can we help you today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great.
Doing great, Dave. Thanks.
Hey, I'm liking the program. Week number two. It's great.
Excellent.
Thanks. How can we help you today?
Hey, I have a question about foam insulation on a roof.
Okay.
So I have a proposed project that I'm thinking about doing on my home. So I have kind of like a modified salt box. Let's call it. I have one pitch that pitches towards the south, and then I have a clear story, and then another six pitch that pitches towards the north. So it's two separate roof systems with about a 6 foot clear story that spans the two, if you kind of understand my meaning.
Yep. So if I was to look from the side of the building, it's the two sides are not even. You have kind of a one side goes down a little further.
Yeah, correct. I don't have like a typical
right.
I don't have a typical roof, you know, system such as it is.
Sure.
The old roof system was terribly underframed. There's like, you know,
you're stealing our thunder there, Dave. We were going there next. Go ahead.
Well, it was a kit home built back in the 70s, and it's like. On the north pitch, it's a clear span of almost 20 feet framed with a 2x8, which is sagged terribly.
Whoa. Wow.
And on the south side, it's a little bit better. There's partition walls, but it's still framed with 2x8, which is probably kind of mediocre. So a proposed plan was to maybe, instead of this time of year, exposing a roof is a little bit dicey, you know, with the weather that's ahead of us. So framing on top of the old roof with proper framing members to allow more insulation and a little bit more stability to the roof, and then spraying those cavities with, you know, at least 6 inches of foam.
Okay. So with that would give you about an R42, and you're building a new assembly on top of an old, and you do have to meet current code, which would be an R49. The tough thing about spray foam, too, is it has a diminishing return in the sense where your first inch of foam is the most valuable for performance and everything else. Once you start increasing the levels, it still performs, but the rate of performance does not hold true for that first inch of foam. That being said, I'll first throw out there that we see these kit homes often, not this particular type, but several types, where even a manufactured home that's manufactured in another state, not in climate zone 5 or 6, and so it's engineered for southern climates where we don't have the heating and cooling cycles like we do here. It doesn't have the snow load considerations that we have to take into consideration when we're looking at this. And so before you insulate, before you make your assembly tighter and better, you really have to look at the overall structure, which you're doing now. Some people don't. They'll get a flat roof assembly, put more air seal ceiling in there, make it tight, more insulation, and all of a sudden they start carrying a higher amount of snow during the winter for an underframed roof assembly, and we have seen structural failures at that point. So you really have to look at everything here, and you're on the right path. One thing I would say, if I were able to do this, is that I would strongly recommend still pulling back the roofing material. I would then be using TJIs, which is like an I-joist, a wood I-joist, that you could put on top of each rafter. But at the same time as you're attaching those, you can actually bring up some of the swale out of the framing members below. And there's some techniques you'd have to use there, but it would actually improve some of the problems. But at the same time, that could affect some of the sheetrock below too, if the sheetrock right up against the current rafters. And so with that, I would say that definitely increasing the framing is a structural plus. Would I do it right on top of what's there without inspecting? That's what I wouldn't do, because I have pulled off some of the sheathing previously on a ranch where I took a piece of the sheathing and threw it on top of another rafter that was exposed, and it split in half at the weight of just a four-foot piece of sheathing. So I started looking at the rest of them, and they were all compromised. And so you really need to put eyes on this before you're going to make that type of investment, in my opinion. But, yes, building on top of the framing, sistering those two members together, the old and new, as long as the old is in good condition, I think is the right approach. And then you get a better cavity. Structurally, it's sound. You can get it air sealed, and you can add the right type of insulation, whether it's foam, whether it's some other type of product like Dense-Pack Cellulose, and make sure you have that air channel on top of that too, though, to extricate any of the moisture that just from vapor drive that could accumulate in that assembly.
And although,
right,
go ahead.
We wouldn't fill it full. And I've also thought about maybe drilling down through the old sheathing on the old framing to get down to the top plates of the existing wall. So in the future, if I decide to maybe pack out the framing on my exterior walls, that step ahead to create, you know, the quote unquote envelope.
Right, to make it contiguous from wall to roof.
Exactly.
That's, first of all, great that you know that already, and congratulations. There are a couple things that spring to mind as Jim is talking. First of all, I wouldn't rush this job unless you have a clear reason not to go through the roof. You're saying you're thinking about not exposing the roof. I think this is, depending on the condition and the type of roof it is, this is exactly the type of work that we would prefer to do from outside, because it's easy to do outside. You're going to be able to expose those existing 2x8 members that are underbuilt and inspect them. You'll be able to look at the insulation that's existing, if there's any insulation between the rafters that are there now, and you'll be able to build up a new assembly with full knowledge of what's going on in there, right? The second one I'd like to say is something about using spray foam. Spray foam is the only insulation that is actually manufactured on site, right? You have these two chemicals, you put them through, and unless you know what you're doing, you can get the mixing wrong. And even if you get it really right, we have seen lots of cathedral ceilings that were supposed to be completely airtight, and after 2 or 3 years, there's a shrinkage of the foam away from some of those members. We have pictures of melts. I don't remember, you know, if you were listening last week, but Steve Spatz was talking about, go on outside and look where the snow is melting on your roof. It's exactly that type of image we were seeing. So spray foam is a really good thing that we like to use as sparingly as possible. In an attic like yours, if we were to do a cathedral ceiling, we would say, pull the shingles off, pull the roof off, wait until the weather is good for that, or use a crew that doesn't care, and start
about the temperatures.
About the temperatures, not about the roof. We want them to care about your roof. And then deal with the structural thing, issues, sistering, et cetera, and then put together an assembly. And if that assembly, if you're choosing the TJI, you can go with a 12-inch TJI, fill that with cellulose, have on top of that a membrane that will let moisture come out of it so you have a safe assembly, and then we lie 2x4s on top of that to create a channel. On top of that, we would put down the OSB, and on top of the OSB, we'd put the new shingles or roofing. That gives us a channel that separates the roofing from your cathedral ceiling and gives your cathedral ceiling all the breathing it'll ever need.
And Dave, you did touch on something that I think is really important, because you said you would like to, in the future, open up to attach the thermal boundary to the actual walls. Keep in mind.
Right, because right now it's just a 2x4 wall.
Yeah, exactly. And what I have seen before is a gentleman, I showed up at his house and he said, hey, look, I had my roof taken off last year and they put 4 inches of blue board underneath there and it's just working. I'm sure it's working better. And he was really confident in it. But unfortunately, what they did was they didn't take back what was below. They didn't open up the roof assembly below. So what you had in there, when we inspected it, was really poorly performing fiberglass and then an air channel above the fiberglass, then the sheathing, then the blue board. So basically, the blue board was not tied into the thermal envelope. So we paid a lot of money to put a lot of insulation up there that would be just as well performing if it was in his garage and not on the house. So you want to make sure you're tying that assembly together from the roof line down to the walls, down to the basement, and such like that. So you want a complete contiguous thermal barrier.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I also just want to throw one last piece out there. Have you had an energy audit done on the house?
The energy audit was done before me, but not too long ago, but before me. So it wasn't done, with myself on site.
Right. Is it more than 5 years ago?
No, it was probably within the last 8 months.
Oh, that's great. So you're new to this house.
Yes.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're going to be doing good work. It sounds like you're on the right track and you're asking the right questions. If you want to get deeper into what we would recommend, send us an email at housecallsvt@gmail.com and we'll take a closer look at what you're looking at.
All right, guys, that sounds great. Hey, I'm liking the program again. Keep it up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's what we're looking for. That was right down our alley.
And so if you would like to call in with any of your questions, once again, our call-in number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255.
So one of the things that we talk about when talking about, we are talking about attics. It sounds like we're only talking about roofs, but we're really talking about attics today, is if you have that attic flat, that's the simple one. What we need to do in an attic flat situation is look at a couple of bits there, right? When they build a house, by putting up the foundation and they build the outside walls, and on the outside walls they drop the roof, and after they drop the roof, they build the interior walls and then they put the sheetrock up. And what that does, oddly enough, is it creates these little chimneys from the basement all the way up through all of those walls into your attic. That's called the top plates of framing. And one of the first things we try to do is trace those top plates of framing and seal them in the attic. If you're building a brand new house, or if you're a builder and you're going to build a new house, it is now recommended that you build this foundation, you build the walls, you put the rafters up, and then you build your top plane, your pressure plane, whether with OSB first and then sheetrock or just straight up sheetrock. And after that, you build your interior walls.
Yeah, that question came up yesterday on a high performance home we're doing over in Shelburne. Our builder had asked, are we going to be doing it like this, to where we build the exterior walls, put the trusses on there, and then to the bottom quarter of the trusses, we attach OSB or some type of membrane that's air sealed before the interior walls go up? Because if you do it that way, you get a better positive air-sealed pressure plane, and that it is also dealing with the moisture drive as well. And right now we have a call from Rich in Starksboro. Rich, go ahead.
Hi. About the previous caller with the cathedral ceiling, I've got one too, and I'm 99% certain there's mice up in there. But I was one of the things I've thought about, maybe I first thought about 10 or 12 years ago, is taking some 2-inch polyiso serenurate and getting some screws and just screwing it to the studs right on top of my sheetrock inside the building, and then sealing it, and then coating it, and that would become the new ceiling. What do you think of that approach?
We have used that approach in the past. We prefer not to, and here's the reason why. It's not a bad idea. Right? Putting the rigid insulation on the inside because it's accessible, you don't have to redo your shingles or your roofing, that's good. The only downside to that, and it may not be a downside, well, there are two downsides. One is you're not getting rid of the mice in your ceiling, right? They're still there degrading the insulation and having...
Oh, the wiring, too. I've seen it where they peeled back 4 feet of the insulation on the wiring, and there was arcing involved and blowing circuit breakers, possible fire hazards.
So. Yeah, so if you know that there are mice in there...
Been there.
Oh, we're sorry to hear that.
Jeez.
So for that reason, as one of the two reasons, we wouldn't recommend that. The other reason is that what we're trying to do is reduce thermal bridging. I remember when Steve Spatz from Efficient Vermont was talking last week about the seeing your roofing members through the frost on the roof, right? The reason that those are melting faster is that they're more highly conductive. The wood is more highly conductive than the air or the insulation next to it, right? So when we're putting a rigid on, we try to put the rigid on the outside because that prevents the studs from cooling down because you're now insulating the entire outside of the building. If you were to do what you're recommending, it would increase the performance of that particular ceiling, and it would reduce the air leakage out of it because most of this polyiso is going to be either foil faced or you'll be taping the seams, which we would, if you're going to do that, we recommend.
Oh yeah, too many times we've seen, Rich, that people will go ahead and put the insulation board up there and say, well, I've got this board in there, it's got to be doing a great job. But then every linear foot, if you look at a 4x8 sheet of plywood, or of insulation, excuse me, you're going to have basically 24 linear feet of gaps that will allow that warm air to get right up and out. So you definitely need to tape the seams. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, can I foam gun the seams?
You can foam gun the seams, although foam, single part foam is not a good air sealer. It seems like it would be. Actually, when we're doing super tight homes and the builder uses a single part foam around windows, that's where we find the leakage, and then I have to go back and do something else. There are a lot of very good tapes that are perfectly good for this use and not significantly more expensive in
but
the end.
But not duct tape.
No, do not. Duct tape is not even supposed to be used for ducts, right?
Yeah.
Except for whack-whacks. I would say... I would personally not recommend that you go ahead with your plan. I would say if I were to do anything, and you're doing all that work inside anyway, I would rip off the inside sheetrock, pull out the insulation.
Well, how old is this roof?
Yeah, how old is the roof?
Yeah, what type of roof and how old is it?
The roof, it's a standing seam metal roof, 24 gauge, 1997.
Yes. I would definitely agree with Chris then, going from underneath.
Go from the inside. Pull all that sheetrock off, pull all of the insulation out, get rid of those mice, right? Let's not give them a place to live.
Can you have time to talk about that on a future show, like how to find their holes? You got to find their holes, how they go in, right?
So. No, what you have to do is just remove the entire thing. Blocking the holes will just push them to make a hole somewhere else.
If they're still in your assembly, because they're going to try to get back out. I mean, certainly there are types of foams you can use that will it would decrease the chance for the mice to want to come in. But if they can sense or smell food and heat, they're going to burrow their way in through almost any material. So plugging the hole in...
I don't understand how to get rid of them, though. You know, there's nothing, you know, we've had them here. We've had this place since 86. And
this is where we would recommend an audit, because one of the things we've heard as responses from clients in the past is, not only is my house more comfortable after you did your work, but we don't have rodents anymore.
A customer of mine, I believe it was in Fletcher, had told me, for the last 30 years, every day during the winter, they would take out one dead mouse from their house every day from one of the traps. He says, since you did the work, we don't have any mice. We don't sell it as a pest control.
No, but it has that as a side effect.
Yeah. Let's say you just basically say, I don't have the funds or the tolerance to go through a more invasive approach like we're recommending, which we do know is a sound assembly, and you just want to go with the rigid board, like we said, there would be a benefit to that. Some of the tricks of the trade is that, let's say you have 4 inches of foam you're going to be putting up there, maybe 6 inches of foam. Finding screws long enough to go ahead and attach and go all the way into the rafters, and then at that point in time, you're going to want to probably use wood strapping and fender washers. They make a 3-inch fender washer that can go with a screw, and that'll help hold that insulation in place, but you can also send those screws through strapping and just make sure the edges are all sealed around the insulation, and then you can send those screws through the strapping into the rafters and then have a nice bonding surface or nailing surface for the sheetrock thereafter.
And just one more last thought there, Rich, is we've been in a number of these houses, a cape with a cathedral ceiling, and the reason that we couldn't put 4 or 6 inches of insulation on the ceiling was because there were doors.
Yes.
And you're just building your ceiling down to where you can't open your door anymore.
Or so you encroach upon the trim or whatever.
This is all cathedral.
Sure.
This is a slope of the cathedral.
Yep.
Oh, yep. Yeah, that's exactly, I mean, on the second
There's
floor
no
of
doors
a cape.
Up there.
Yeah, that's another consideration.
Okay.
If you have any further questions, we'll be happy to go deeper in on this with you on the email. Once again, housecallsvermont@gmail.com. Thanks, Rich, so much for calling, and have a good rest of your
Thank
weekend.
You.
Oh, and so the next topic that we're going to be looking at is icicles.
Ice dams, too.
That's when the bigger brother of icicles and what they'll do to your house. A lot of people don't know this, but, you know, when you get a big coating of snow on top of your house, underneath that, since you usually have warm, leaky air that's getting out of the house and into the attic assembly, it starts to melt down or warm the surface of the actual roof sheathing, and it melts the bottom layer of the snow, liquefying it, turning it into water. So even though you see that the snow is not melted up above, the temperature at the base of that, at the roof line, is liquefied water. And then that will run down the roof plane, then daylight right along the eave and start to refreeze. And then drip by drip, it'll turn into a bigger ice formation. What happens then, after that's occurred for usually several days, it builds up enough to where it creates a pocket behind it on the roof side to where water can be trapped. And once that water gets trapped, it can start backing its way into the roofing materials beyond the sheathing, dripping back down, refreezing inside the roof assembly sometimes. At the very least, it can cause deterioration or mold. And then we've seen a couple of years back, it was really a strange winter where we had a lot of snow, but then we had a lot of warmer temperatures and more snow. And we saw so much of this backing up that was actually coming down through the wall assemblies as well, and then causing icicles underneath the courses of beveled siding. And thus, if it got into your wall like that, oh my gosh, the havoc that it plays with the building materials, the mold possibilities, the insulation degradation, all those things that come into play. So, Chris, why would we not want to see those beautiful icicles on the side of our house?
Well, I'd love to see beautiful icicles, but I like to see them on waterfalls because that's where they're not going to interfere with your living. An icicle on your house is an indication that there's something drastically wrong with attic air sealing. It doesn't come down to anything else. If you see icicles, there's even the Icicle Challenge. You probably have seen and heard participation in
your local towns.
Local town energy committee will have a contest. And as a part of the contest, they'll give you a free energy audit through Efficiency Vermont. Both Jim and I have worked on those programs and have offered our services for free for the winners of those types of energy committee events. Once we know that you have icicles, it's not whether you're having air leakage, warm, moist air going and warming up the bottom of the sheathing, which melts that snow, which causes that to refreeze when it gets over something that isn't warm, where it gets over the actual eave side. And that's when you really need to call someone. This is not something you can fix yourself. Or if you're going to fix yourself, you need to have the kind of knowledge that Jim or I or other members of the Efficiency Vermont Energy Excellence Network do have and can apply there.
And so, you know, when it gets down to this, once again, we're looking at how do we make an assembly that's going to be really sound, not just improving an existing one, but building one right the first time. It was about 3 years ago, I was called out to do a home performance assessment on a house that was built in November. It went through one winter, and by April, the attic assembly was full of mold. You could smell it in the house, and it was just compromised. And so the builder had asked us out there to take a look at it, make suggestions, and the major problem was the ventilation component. Once again, they had an easy pathway for warm, moist air to get into the attic. Then when it did, it carried moisture. It would condense on the cold surfaces. And after you have that cycle set up, when you've got a heat source, a moisture source, and a food source, mold will grow. And it may die off at a time, but then it's probably going to come back. And just treating it without treating the problem of where it's coming from or trying to break that 3-point cycle of moisture, food and the right temperature, if you don't break that, you're going to have that reoccurring. And, you know, for the building occupants, I don't know how many buildings I've gone into, and when I find mold throughout the attic, I start asking people, does anybody in the home have any type of respiratory issues? We've had, hands will go up. My son has asthma. I get headaches, you know, when I come back to the house. And it's
as
not...
As soon as we start heating this, the heating season, exactly. Everybody gets an upper respiratory problem.
Yep. And so, you know, once again, what's key about this is getting somebody to be able to put eyes on this for you through a home performance assessment, through Efficiency Vermont, or a contractor who is dedicated to understanding, you know, the building as a system, especially if you're doing the top part of the house, that most important attic part, and you're a roofer, that you've got this roofer who's dedicated to finding out, okay, why this failed prematurely? We're not just selling you another roof. Let's make sure we're getting to the source of the problem, to giving you a better benefit and a better return on investment, quite honestly.
If you ever run into a contractor, a roofing contractor, or any contractor who's trying to save you money by not removing an extant assembly that is failing, get someone else. You're just asking for trouble and more cost down the line. It's better to pay someone good money for good work than pay someone slightly less money for bad work and setting yourself up in the future for more expensive repairs and possible health and safety issues between.
Yeah, and with that, there was a house that I looked at not too long ago over in Jericho, where they just moved in and they found that they definitely needed to do some efficiency work improvements on this 1978 structure. The roof had been replaced a few years back, like I mentioned, and yet they didn't take a gander into the attic, if you will, put eyes on things, and to find out that this was subframed. It was 2x6s, I think it was 24 inches on center, and they were just regular rafters. They were all sagging. And
regular rafters means not trusses.
Yeah. Not TJIs, and they were just undersized at the same time. They weren't 2x12s, 2x10s. They were just 2x6s, and you could already see standing in the yard this big swale in the roof, this depression in the roof line. And I said, if you make this a more efficient home, you are setting yourself up for structural failure. So you need to go ahead and address this. And unfortunately, when the roofer did this, they did not ask that question appropriately. I mean, it was visible. You could see what was going on. So you got to just take a step back, take a more comprehensive look at the assembly. And yes, there are a lot of great, you know, a lot of our sponsors here on the show can offer you a lot of the materials and resources to affect some of your do-it-yourself projects. And that's great. But make sure you're doing that in concert with proper knowledge, proper understanding of the house as a system, so that any money you're investing, it's good money going into the right places.
So two things to that. One is, if you're going to have someone look at your house, make sure that they're BPI certified. It's a minimum requirement, and it should be the energy auditor and the envelope specialist. That's the type of certifications they should have. Secondly, when you're trying to do air sealing work on your house yourself, if you say, I'm a DIYer and I want to do the air sealing in my attic, there are some very, an attic flat, right? Not one of these cathedrals that get very complicated, but just straight up attic flat. No-nos for good air sealing. Don't have a drop-down stair. Drop-down stairs are great for getting in and out of the attic space, but there's no way to air seal them properly.
But once again, it worked for Chevy Chase, that drop-down stair, to get up in the attic.
And then he got back down without it. There you go.
Exactly.
If you're going to be doing air sealing your attic, we have been to a number of clients, and they have done air sealing on themselves, and only one out of 20 or so has done an okay job. Almost all the time, it's a missed opportunity and wasted time and money. The air sealing of the attic is something that is most best left to a company that specifically does that type of work.
And so, Chris, you know, one thing we did not touch on, we did say capes, but where else in a cape are you going to find an attic flat that people aren't really thinking about? Because, you know, when you look at a cape, you think, oh, I've got this little flat ceiling, maybe a little slope going down to a short wall. What's behind those little short walls?
Jim is alluding to knee walls. Knee walls are dead spaces behind walls in a second story space where you have cathedral ceilings. Most of us know that if you have have a second floor, and the rafters go in that floor from the ceiling all the way down to the outside, you've got a lot of unusable space there. That space is sometimes used for storage, but oftentimes the thermal envelope, which is where the outside of the thermal boundary is for the building and the air ceiling boundary, is usually not at the roof line there. It's usually at the floor of that room going out to the edge of the floor, which is even the ceiling of the first floor in the front and back, and up that wall. And we have seen even people who were having problems saying, well, we got a builder who came in who said, well, you're not venting your knee wall enough. And we were just aghast that someone would recommend that. No, in that particular situation, you don't want to, you want to move the thermal envelope up to the roof line there and bring that whole assembly, all of those knee walls into the thermal envelope.
Yeah, the slanted roof line inside the knee wall, not just the slant above, because that little space in that knee wall is still part of the attic when we look at the house, you know, because it's going to perform the same way. So the same measures should be addressed at the same time.
And we also often see that there's not a good connection between the knee wall and the attic, that little bit of slope between them is stuffed full, and you have durability issues there. So we're coming up to the top of the bottom of the hour.
but the end of our show.
It's been a pleasure once again to talk to you and have the opportunity to share our knowledge and experience with you. Once again, if you have questions between now and next week, please give us a email at housecallsvt@gmail.com. We also have a webpage at the Home Builders website, which is homebuildersvt.com. You can go there and check it out, and our YouTube channel link is there as well.
And Chris, what are we going over next week?
Next week, we're on to the B of the ABCs. We'll be talking about basements.
The good, the bad, and the ugly of basements.
With our good friend Matt Clark. Thank you so much, and until next week, stay safe.
House Calls Vermont, brought to you by Hannon Home Center on Mason Drive in Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com. RK Miles, Allen Lumber is closed today and Monday, but will reopen Tuesday, November 17th as RK Miles. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber. There's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basementy. Home Builders and Remodelers Association of Northern Vermont at homebuildersvt.com. And by Poly Construction in South Burlington. One call does it online at polyconstruction.com. It has a crowd.